Hi, and welcome to Prosody, WYEP's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest tonight is the poet Jennifer Kwan Dobbs. Jennifer Kwan Dobbs was born in Wonju, South Korea. Her poems have appeared in 5 a.m., Crazy Horse, Cimarron Review, Cream City Review, Me Poesis, Poetry NZ, Tulane Review, among others, and has been anthologized in Echoes Upon Echoes by Asian American Writers Workshop and Contemporary Voices from the Eastern World, published by Norton in 2008. She teaches at St. Olaf College in Minnesota. Her new book, Paper Pavilion, won the White Pine Poetry Prize and the Sheila Motten Book Award. She's working on a book of essays about unwed mothers in Korea. Hi, Jennifer. How are you?
I'm good, Jan. Elegy for Daniel, 1970 to 2001. After the bullet discharges through the tunnel of his mouth, after it shatters, the Oklahoma evening rips through ragweed and across many rivers. My apartment in Pittsburgh. The metal clips my arm, slams into a plaster wall, and the silence is his, body slackening, and the black fact of the gun underwater. I compress my wound as his ghost kneels beside his body, the bathtub, and as his ghost draws the shower curtain back, I look away. No, I don't want to know his secrets, why sure hands will tag, bag as evidence. He is a poet. He makes the difficult question of speaking a matter of remembering how he shouted the poems he loved. His outbursts were pure country. Yes, rumors circulated, how vets suffer, medication, what he saw as a seal, how weird, and no one could stand the belabored way he read aloud. And I said all the above and more, and to his face, when no one was around, when he finally caught on, I asked him, "Why are you quieter? I've noticed, and it scares me." Even now, I'm busy with details, the dirty work of gathering. Here's rosemary and some pansies, that's for thoughts, rambled to me one fall afternoon, cathedral of learning. How Kumanyaka showed him a way to anchor a moment between stillness and approach. Turning toward tall grass, or a woman's wet hair to braid, or how it could lock arms with an enemy, lose to an overwhelming grasp, or listen to the dying echo of paradise birds singing, so much gibberish, as if a whole life could be reduced to one image, dangling from a fist and engraved with a number. As if a poem only wants to be identified upon delivery, which was why Daniel read Blake, Calvino, and Crane for Fire and Crystal. Why he shut himself up with Bishop. Why Stern's huge breath. Why Oppen, Tufu, and Paz. Lewis and Vollmer mattered for their generosities. Lines layered like the earth in his face. The reds and browns of his voice deepening to what he pursued, half-formed in haze, and burrowing underneath to void tripwire. And Daniel yelling as he plunged after its gray, disappearing shape.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest tonight is the poet Jennifer Kwan Dobbs. She's reading some poems from her book, Paper Pavilion. I wanted to stop you there because you're reading poems about someone we know, Daniel Anderson, we knew, and who's no longer with us. He was a wonderful poet and a veteran of the Gulf Wars. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about that process of writing poems to someone you've lost, where feelings are still there, and how to manage that in a poem?
Mm-hmm. I think when I was writing this poem from the place of grieving for Daniel, what was so challenging about writing this poem was trying to think about who I would give this poem to, especially since Daniel had passed, and yet he was still very present to me and still is, because I remember his poems. And I kept thinking, how could I write this poem with him in mind? How can I give this poem to him? And I recognized that I was also in conversation with him and with his poems, and thinking about his library, thinking about how, what his language really tried to do, helped me to think about, you know, what his poems allowed me to gain as his friend. And so I think that the loss of him was a terrible event, because it meant the loss of another poet. Mm-hmm. At the same time, I think that remembering his poems is a way to make his absence present all the time, and to really celebrate the beauty of that language.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it feels good to hear that work. And Daniel studied at the University of Pittsburgh, worked with Judith Vollmer. Who else did he study with, do you know?
Oh, he studied with Ed Ochester.
Did he study with Ed?
And Lynn Emanuel.
Okay.
And we also shared the same teacher from Oklahoma State University, Lisa Lewis. And so just remembering, you know, the work that I did with her, and he and I were both at Oklahoma State at different times and worked with her at different times. But in a way, when you both share the same teacher, it's as though you both have the same poetry DNA.
Yeah, that's true. That's a bond that is hard to explain. But well, thank you for writing those poems. And obviously, we're on the radio and people can't see your face, but there's a lot of sadness. But there's a lot of life in those poems, you know. So thank you for writing them. Can you read some more?
Sure. The next poem is called Libretto. And this poem, when I was working on it, I think it also came from a place of loss, as you'll see. And it begins with an epigraph. Never know for your eyes, butterfly is about to die. It's from Giacomo Puccini's Madama Butterfly. Again, my false mother of verbena is singing the aria that I'll recite as if I'm a natural child among night flowers, opening their dark eyes to the moon. Not a mother to the ocean that bears its resemblance, like a floating summer barge. Again, I am sinking into her, hazardous silks of caged birds and mute crickets. Into her, televised longing for smokestacks and flags. Into her image, painted onto a soprano's face. Into her vermilion, folds in which are sealed the purposes. Provisional, names from my hands dragging a brass opener through wax. The dream drips onto the table, makes new forms, all scraped and discarded. Beginning is always a problem. When toenail, strand of hair, some notes scribbled by a social worker, in a code familiar as skin. Where is my baby? Is my baby hungry? Does she mourn as I do? Is this loss or libretto? What is our contract if there is blood between us? Have I the right to scabs picked for pink underneath, little shutters to let in air, the pure music? It is raw in there. I am guessing, an alcove to grieve among robes embroidered with cherry blossoms. Festival wagons, cranes returning to a patch of silver at the breast. Leave-taking. Every sleeve myth, every hem a crossing, guarded by dust, dry creek beds, buffalo grass, sky like a kiln. Not the blue heat, but the orange, as in tiger lily. The yellow foxgloves seed ground into the heart's medicine to quicken, in want of a memory. I was 10. A watcher of things winged, PBS, Sunday afternoon at the Met, Levine conducting, plastic swatter in hand, my palms against glass to get through. Windows of my parents' living room covered with damask. I imagine she called to me, Non si parla per te, across the sea of bad reception. I did not see myself, but heard flies humming. I studied the white parts squirming out of their black, mashed bellies, in wonder of death. Still, a birth through the wound, willed by itself. Why else such a distance crossed from its mother, lying on the wood, her ash veil falling away? The Puppet Maker. Might it be that this piece of wood has learned to weep and cry like a child? Cicriotti, The Adventures of Pinocchio. As he angled the screw into the joint, he hesitated to fasten its knee, more real than his own, stiffened by winters, nights of hearth and plates of black bread, that taught gratitude for the small callus on his forefinger, cushioning a day's work. The puppet in his lap flailed its stringless arms as if they were given, without fire in mind and the limitless distance between it and it. Yet he listened not to the reedy voice, I want, but to the wind thrumming against the shutters, hollow knock of wood against wood, a pulse that kept measure with his, which bored the puppet, so that it leapt and spun away, laughing on its spindle legs that loosened, then splintered, and dragged behind as it crawled toward him, weeping for repair. This. I tire of the image. I want to forget it. Properly buried in the pine forest, reclaimed by grass. I tire of all this seeing that's not seeing, a head turning on the rifle's mouth, turning its pus swollen eyes toward the wind, escaping mountain trees, ruffling the soldier's red hair. As he raises his rifle toward the trees, the head spins in four directions. Shock the birds hear. The birds scatter, arching their dark backs, a cry snapping through their necks, lifting up as one to the sky, far away from the forest. Where the soldier stares into the sun's black eye, he can still describe, as an old professor smiling at that distance, his hands again cradling the rifle's head in the photograph, held up for his students to see what he remembered that day. Mud, the enemy, thirst, this. No one can identify or bring home to bury. This is his image. The birds, raising their black fiery wings, cannot read, cannot forget the smell of rotting flesh. Ricochet wind from the sun, wind driving them from that tree, flared in the sun's center to this. His eyes peeled back, blinded by time's shuttered lens, cutting his chest, lipless grinned, hands at attention, holding an act of attention for this.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest tonight is the poet Jennifer Kwan Dobbs. She's reading from her new book, Paper Pavilion, plus some newer poems also. I wanted to ask you about the adoption poems and the birth mother poems. I know you have a lot of work regarding adoption, but I love some of the statements that come out of your poems. For example, you know, what is our contract if there is blood? It is raw in there. It's, you know, these are not. I mean, there's a beauty to the poems, but these are not pretty poems. We were talking about darkness earlier. What drives poems to be dark, and how, as writers, do we bring that darkness in? Allow that darkness in? Etc. Knowing that often listeners, it takes bravery as a listener and as a reader to go in also. So any thoughts on that?
I think that when I was working on the poems, when I was imagining my body connected to the bodies of my family in Korea, I recognized that in a way, I was having to fantasize about those bodies. And at the same time, it was a way of thinking about my own body. And at least in terms of thinking about how my body migrated to the United States through a contract, which predicated that love or preceded the love that has grown around my kinship relationships. But nonetheless, recognizing, though, that the connection of my body to other bodies of family in the forms that they've taken in my life has oftentimes been constructed through contracts of feeling, contracts of money, exchanges of one way or another. So I think that whether I'm coming to this question of how to put together a poem, I'm constantly interested in different kinds of bodies and what kind of contracts make that body have to do what it has to do, whether that body is a soldier's body, a poet's body, such as, you know, Daniel, whom we were talking about a moment ago, in this case, my Korean mother. And then also just asking, well, what kind of exchange is between my mother and me, and do I have the right to talk about her as her daughter even? And then just saying, well, that's a transgression that I have to take in terms of thinking about my own body and where it comes from.
Yeah, isn't that wild that thinking of your own body becomes a transgression? That's, you know, it doesn't make any sense in a way, and yet it's the only way. And I was struck just by how you're talking about bodies and my body and their body. You know, we're both adoptees, and there's a separation when adoptees talk about the body that is not usual. We know this from talking to other people, and it's but it makes perfect sense to me. And but it's different. You know, there's a distance between almost the voice and the body that you're speaking of, and it's sort of stunning to listen to, in a good way. I have a lot of questions, but I think I think we need more poems.
Okay. How could I forget, at the beach's edge, a mound of twisted kelp laid on its side, as the tide rolled in to pull it apart, rolled in pulling like midnight hands across the clock face, to deny it body and so drag it back into the black water. But its knots moved like sinew with the currents, moved with, not against, and so stayed, in a bed of sand carved out by undercurrents, lifting it gently onto the bed. Impassive, its leaves, undulated in the slow swirling, rose and fell, and I could see, exposed to moonlight, not a tangle of leaves, but a letting go of names that would weigh down its body, like cargo buoyed far, then forever lost. I can't bear this, can't stop translating her body by water to move it again and again, and not Amma, now mother, now the Indo-European root, now the sharing by Latin mater and the Greek meter. Not measure's source, yet I count back to mater, the heart of matter. Matter with a heart, maternus, and every material bearing her trace, bearing her variously in the grain of everything. Letter to N, Paris, 1796. Dear Monsieur, I take thee for ambitious staging after the bailiff read the list. How we gathered afterward for mock trials featuring Saturn, stamping his writ on a pig, and the old duke bowing with flourish, since he longed to be a playwright. How we laughed at reason, pushed to a desperate rendezvous, a young jeweler screwing a bald countess, hoping for pregnancy, a transfer to cleaner corridors and more time. I do give thee my hand stripping, my skirt into linen, for a milliner miscarrying her first child. My other hand groping my lover's body, smelling of urine, while he recited Montesquieu in my ear and spread me in an Ancien Régime manner. Bravado for the Carmelite friars, conciergerie, where all awaited in sickness and health, Madame Guillotine's knitting crew. For speaking in tender riddles, to survive. For entreaties hidden in a pug's collar. For my children, bribing the gate sentry to return that naughty lost dog. For tarot cards dealt to a young marquis curious about peace, as if we could have forecasted our confinement or sudden release. I do promise to cultivate and obey favors we both may require, should the directory collapse in a tub of oatmeal water, and vow to introduce you to the probable replacements, likes, to increase your impression. For richer or poorer, I ally myself, General, to your talents to blast infantries and influence warrants issued on rumor, and will destroy documents, even this one, that betray my heart. You will never doubt my role till death do us part, performed with the subtlest timing, every name you bestow me. Though so help me God, I'm Rose Taché de Beauharnais, and by your most kind invitation, I'm Josephine.
If you just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest tonight is the poet Jennifer Kwan Dobbs, reading some new poetry and also some work from her new book, Paper Pavilion, winner of the White Pine Press Prize. Is that correct? Did I say that right?
White Pine Press Poetry Prize.
Yes. too many P's. Still thinking about the birth mother and the bodies and the darkness, but also I'm thinking of the language in your work and using some of your language. I feel often a sharpness in the language and in the sort of requirements of the poem. It's almost like there's a feeling as a reader and a listener, I better pay attention, you know, in a good way. It's like, pay attention. There's a lot happening here, and someone's head might get cut off soon or something. There's a menacing feeling, which I like. But, I mean, some of the words you use, like cutting and shuddering and, you know, there is that edge and all the guns. I mean, there's a lot of violence in there. And I'm not saying, you know, making some kind of judgment. I'm just saying, you know, it's there and you can feel that blade in your work. How does that get in there? Is that just things that arise or things that you see and then heighten in revision?
There's a lot of violence in my poems.
Yeah.
And I think the reason why is because when I began imagining my mother, my Korean mother, I recognized that the way in which my imagination was shaped really came out of the stories that I had been told about her, not necessarily from my adoptive family, but just from culture mm-hmm. here in the U.S., mm-hmm. how are Korean women's bodies imagined and not imagined. And I recognized that particularly growing up in Oklahoma, which back in the 80s and 70s, of course, we didn't have the internet. And so the news came to us much more slowly. In general, all of us back then, by virtue of not being able to go on the web, and also just being alienated from Asian American community out in Oklahoma, I really just had these stock narratives of what would have happened to my body as a Korean woman if I'd remained in Korea, what has happened to my mother's body by virtue of remaining in Korea and giving me this gift of freedom from violence. And so,
do you want to give us an example of one of those narratives?
Sure. For example, I was told growing up that my mother was a prostitute and that she loved me so much, she gave me to my parents in the United States. And if I had remained in Korea, then I too would have become a prostitute. And that this gift of freedom here in the United States was her way of loving me. Mm-hmm. And so when I began imagining her as a human being in a body, not the stock narrative, I recognized that I had to think through and imagine through all of that violence that cluttered her. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that at the same time, all that violence made her visible to me. Mm-hmm. And that I had to properly name that violence and where it came from. Mm-hmm. And I had to be attentive to how that violence was very real, and that I was being asked to imagine her in that way.
Right.
But at the same time, that violence, it's not true.
Right. And there's a violence in that perpetration of that telling.
Yes.
We have time for one more poem.
Wanju City, Camp Long. Here I am, unmothered and unfathered, yet born of a mother and father. Rumored to have screwed in a bar basement, now a DVD room you can rent per hour. Faux leather couches and Coca-Cola, 24-hour action, flicks where you're Indiana Jones or an astronaut, cowboy, who always gets the girl. That kind of girl haunts as I descend each metal step into the graffitied throat of their past that might have been boot sludge or stain, some trace of a GI steadying his tool and softening, in awe of the empty knuckled hardness, hungry for a pleading face. He is giver and taker, paying the permed mamasan guarding the door, the clock, her girls, and now my father slipping through, wood beaded curtains, sheets, lace, and lips. I can't go down as he went down, blind and sure, she wanted it, or me. I pull back, I look away. I can't say he knelt in shame or covered her eyes, skimming a ceiling crack to divide herself. I can't deny I want them here, groping against time. I can't say otherwise when the ajushi steps out and complains, mistaking me for someone else, a Korean woman, blocking the stairwell and forgetting herself.
The poetry of Jennifer Kwan Dobbs. Thank you so much for being here. It's great work.
Oh, thank you, Jan. It's a pleasure and an honor.
You've been listening to Prosody, WYEP's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. Writers appearing on Prosody also have their work showcased in Chapter and Verse, a biweekly feature in Pittsburgh City Paper, the Arts Entertainment News Weekly, published every Wednesday. Prosody is produced by Jan Beatty and Ellen Wadey. Our sound engineers are Michelle Stoner and Lisa Alexander. Please tune in every Tuesday night at 7:30 for Prosody, 91.3 WYEP.